During my early 20s, I went through a phase of blaming the church I had attended in high school for all my spiritual deficiencies. Evangelical megachurches make good punching bags. My reasoning went something like this. I was spiritually shallow because the pastor's teaching had been shallow. I wasn't fully engaged because they hadn't done enough to grab my attention. I was a hypocrite because everyone else had been a hypocrite. I didn't know God because they hadn't provided enough programs. Or they hadn't provided the right programs. Or maybe they'd had too many programs. All I knew was that it was someone else's fault. Blaming the church for our problems is second only to the popular and easy course of blaming our parents for everything that's wrong with us. But the older I get, the less I do of both. I hope that's partly due to the wisdom that comes with age, but I'm sure it's also because I am now both a parent and a pastor. Suddenly, I have a lot more sympathy for my dad and mom and the pastors at my old church. Funny how that works, isn't it? At the church where I now pastor, which I love, some young adults remind me of myself when I was in high school. They are church kids who know so much about Christian religion and yet so little about God. Some are passive, completely ambivalent towards spiritual things. Others are actively straying from their faith, ticked off about their parents' authority, bitter over a rule or guideline, and counting the minutes until they turn 18 and can disappear. Others aren't going anywhere, but they stay just to go through the motions. For them, church is a social group. It's strange being on the other side now. When I pray for specific young men and women who are wandering from God, when I stand to preach and feel powerless to change a single heart, when I sit and counsel people and it seems nothing I can say will draw them away from sin, I remember the pastors from my teenage years. I realize they must have felt like this too. They must have prayed and cried over me. They must have labored over sermons with students like me in mind. I see now that they were doing the best they knew how, but a lot of the time I wasn't listening. During high school, I spent most Sunday mornings doodling, passing notes, checking out girls, and wishing I were 2 years older and 5 inches taller so a redhead named Jenny would stop thinking of me as her little brother. That never happened. I mostly floated through grown-up church. Like a lot of teenagers in evangelical churches, I found my sense of identity and community in the parallel universe of the youth ministry. Our youth group was geared to being loud, fast-paced, and fun. It was modeled on the massive and influential seeker-sensitive Willow Creek Community Church located outside Chicago. The goal was simple. Put on a show, get kids in the building, and let them see that Christians are cool. Thus, Jesus is cool. We had to prove that being a Christian is, contrary to popular opinion and even a few annoying passages of the Bible, loads of fun. Admittedly, it's not as much fun as partying and having sex, but pretty fun nonetheless. Every Wednesday night, our group of 400-plus students divided into teams. We competed against each other in games and won points by bringing guests. As a homeschooler, of course, I was completely worthless in the bring friends from school category. So I tried to make up for that by working on the drama and video team. My buddy Matt and I wrote, performed, and directed skits to complement our youth pastor's messages. Unfortunately, our idea of complimenting was to deliver skits that were not even remotely connected to the message. The fact that Matt was a Brad Pitt lookalike assured that our skits were well received, at least by the girls. The high point of my youth group performing career came when the pastor found out I could dance and asked me to do a Michael Jackson impersonation. The album Bad had just come out. I bought it, learned all the dance moves, and then when I performed, how do I say this humbly? I blew everyone away. I was bad, and I mean that in the good sense of the word bad. The crowd went absolutely nuts. The music pulsed and girls were screaming and grabbing at me in mock adulation as I moonwalked and lip-synced my way through one of the most inane pop songs ever written. I loved every minute of it. Looking back, I'm not real proud of that performance. I would feel better about my bad moment if the sermon that night had been about the depravity of man or something else that was even slightly related. But there was no connection. It had nothing to do with anything. For me, dancing like Michael Jackson that night has come to embody my experience in a big, evangelical, seeker-oriented youth group. It was fun, it was entertaining, it was culturally savvy at the time, and it had very little to do with God. Sad to say, I spent more time studying Michael's dance moves for that drama assignment than I was ever asked to invest in studying about God. Of course, this was primarily my own fault. I was doing what I wanted to do. There were other kids in the youth group who were more mature and who grew more spiritually during their youth group stint. And I don't doubt the good intentions of my youth pastor. He was trying to strike the balance between getting kids to attend and teaching them. Maybe I wouldn't have been interested in youth group if it hadn't been packaged in fun and games and a good band. But I still wish someone had expected more of me, of all of us. Would I have listened? I can't know. But I do know that a clear vision of God and the power of His Word and the purpose of Jesus' life, death, and resurrection were lost on me in the midst of all the flash and fun.